Hi, I'm Andrew.
I'm Scott.
And I'm Steve.
And you're listening to Weekly Geek Speak.
You are. You bloody are.
Coming up, we will be talking a whole range of topics in open forum, and we'll be joined by Luke Pianik, who is talking Doctor Who.
Doctor what?
Doctor when.
Why?
Doctor why?
Doctor Hen.
Doctor how?
Doctor Hendrick. I don't know why that amused me.
We are a Weekly Geek podcast. Thank you very much for joining us. If you do like us and you do want to hear more, give us a follow at Weekly Geek Speak on Twitter. We're on Instagram. And we are also on Facebook, facebook.com/Weekly Geek Speak. The hub of everything is weeklygeekspeak.com. That's where we live. And you can subscribe to us, iTunes, Spreaker, Stitcher, or Podcastland. We also have a YouTube channel, which we're hoping to add more content to soon.
Oh, yeah. Content.
So there'll be lots of Doctor Who.
Subscribe and get involved.
It's all about the content.
It's all about the content.
It's all about the content.
We provide the content.
You
watch the content.
Look at it.
I don't know what we're doing. I don't.
Look at our content.
We clearly don't have it enough. Fail content for a podcast.
We do.
It was going to say content over and over.
That last 2 minutes is Weekly Geek Speak gold.
It is. It's in the best of.
It is.
Coming soon.
Well, every other week I do my 3-word reviews. Now, if you have any 3-word reviews, if you watch a movie, do tweet us at Weekly Geek Speak and hashtag 3-word review or 3-word reviews. I don't know which one it technically is, but do it.
I do it with a number. Do you write it?
No,
do it with a number, yeah.
3-word reviews.
3-word reviews. But these are mine, and every other week I go through all the ones I've watched and I 3-word review them.
Or is it 3-word review, actually?
3-word review.
Hashtag 3-word review. Let's commit now.
I was just going to say I'll check the king of 3-word reviews. Yeah, what reading them.
He should say.
Yeah. At Popular Outcast is very good. If you want to get the idea, just look at Popular Outcast on Twitter, Pete Bushbauer. He's very good at 3-word reviews.
Yep, hashtag 3-word reviews.
Yes, the king has spoken.
First film I watched since we last recorded was Shallow Hal.
Oh, yeah.
Oh.
5 out of 10.
Yeah.
Typical Farrelly brother.
It's all right. You don't get angry and it's over.
Yeah. It's just very I think.
Yeah, it is what it is.
He's got a good message there, but it just seems to snark at the message throughout it anyway. Mm. Oh, don't laugh at fat people, but let's laugh at these fat people. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's kind of...
It's like everyone's beautiful on the inside, but they are also hilarious because they're fat.
it's bizarre, I remember, yeah.
Yeah, it's a bit of double-edged.
I then watched Knocked Up, 7 out of 10. It was for a long time going to be my recommend last week, but because I didn't have very much. But 7 out of 10, I do like it. Possibly Apatow's best, I guess he said. What would you say is his best then, Steve?
I like Superbad.
Yeah.
He didn't direct it.
Apatow
directed.
Yeah, I didn't like Knocked Up.
He did Knocked Up, 40-year-old virgin,
didn't
This
like
Is
that.
40...
Didn't. See that.
I like This Is 40 a lot, actually.
And the one with Adam Sandler and Seth
Rogen. Funny People.
I
like Knocked Up, though. I do like it.
I think a lot of people go into these expecting them to be comedy, Saturday Night Live comedies. Actually, they're more drama comedies, aren't they?
Yeah, and they always feel far too long for my liking.
There's never any snort laugh moments, but there's a lot of just why funny lines or moments. There's different types of comedy, and it's not one that gets a lot of titters out of you. It's just more of a recognition of humour enough to like it. So I think
most of them, like Knocked Up, 40-Year-Old Virgin, and This Is 40, they're all good in my view. It's Funny People just falls a little flat, but we've talked about that before.
Yeah.
Number 3, I watched Jurassic World. We reviewed it 2 weeks ago. 7 out of 10. Stupid popcorn fun.
Yep.
Yeah.
The stupidest.
Stupidest.
But the funnest.
Then I watched Dawn of the Planet of the Apes, of the Three of the Rings, of the 9 out of 10. Movie still strong.
Humans.
Together, ape strong.
Have you seen it yet?
Yeah.
What do you think?
I loved it. I brought it as a Did I bring it as a recommend? No, I definitely spoke about it.
You spoke about
it. It's incredible. I loved it. Yeah, absolutely loved it.
When's the third one out?
War of the Planet of the Apes.
It's 2016. It's in with all those movies next year. Yeah, the next
it says everything that I love the first two of this trilogy, and like there's that much coming.
Yeah.
It's almost like obscured by
900 of the films.
Yeah,
definitely.
I then watched Despicable Me. 7 out of 10. Minions are redundant. I hate Minions.
I know, but in the context of that film where they should have stayed.
Yes, I guess, but even then, most of the scenes that they're in, they're not necessarily.
They're just side skits.
They are. They're a side skit. They're a toy seller. They are farting extras, as you would have said before. And they're creepy. I don't quite get the allure. They haven't got cute voices. They sound like evil things living under your bed.
They look like earbuds.
They're just freaky.
They're like sentient earbuds.
Blocky plugs, things.
I don't mind them. They're inoffensive.
Oh, they're just stupid.
I just hate dungarees. I think when we boil it down, if they weren't wearing dungarees, I mean.
So if they were naked, you'd be there?
Hell yeah.
Okay.
It's not a question. I like Despicable Me, though.
It is a good film. Good. I just think it survives fine. But I do get them. I just don't like them. I just think they're money. That's all they are. I can actually picture the script being written and then people going, this is good, this is a really good story, but where's the selling? This fluffy unicorn is not enough. How about yellow balls with eyes that go, a potato? Fucking annoying. They just do my fucking head in.
So if they weren't in it, would it have been a higher score?
No, I don't think it's just they're redundant.
Yeah.
Absolutely redundant. They don't make it better, they don't make it worse. They're just redundant.
Okay.
Cool.
Little yellow turds. The Lost World, Jurassic Park, 7 out of 10. Difficult second album, I think.
Yeah.
Because the first one's so good that it's always going to suffer from it. I think
that's
good. Fair. I did watch it, though, and I did think some of the lines are terrible.
Yeah,
they're over-scripted.
Yeah, there's great moments, which is why you hold it in similar esteem and why it's good, but obviously we talk about the end, but there's just little character bits and lines, and there's a lot of just weird. You can see a lot of scrag.
Yeah, and a great example is when the girl does gymnastics things and kicks a velociraptor, and then Jeff Goldblum says, "The school chucked you off the team." You wouldn't be thinking that kind of stuff in that situation. And I know that you've got to have a bit of allowance because of movies, but there's just too many of those. Quick
too many
asides.
Things for you to try and forgive.
No, not that. No, no, I'm not.
Just too
it's
much.
It's simply the lines. Okay. There's too many quips.
Right.
And Spielberg likes to do real conversations, but it feels too fakely real, which sounds bizarre.
Yeah.
Violence, technology, not good, Bedfellows. You know, it's really awful. Oh, cringy lines, but it's nowhere near as bad as Jurassic World. Labyrinth, I watched 7 out of 10. Wacky crotch creeps. Because I find all of those creatures a little freaky as well. It's a messy film, but it's got so much going for it. But a lot of her Henson films around that point, I thought, were a little bit scruffy.
I like to pretend when anyone talks about Labyrinth, they just talk about the crotch. So as they embark on their review, I just smile to myself.
It is very crotchy.
It is crotchy.
Is there a movie more crotchy?
It's a pretty crotchy movie.
There was the Battlefield Earth crotch.
Oh, that was crotchy. That's crotch. That was pretty crotchy. In fact, that is the most crotchy I think I have encountered.
That was crotchy.
And I've seen some crotchy films.
Oh, yeah, Magic Mike is nothing
compared
to... That's
pretty crotchy.
Didn't you say Shame as well?
That's just pure
cocky. That's pure cocky. That's not crotchy. Are we going to watch Magic Mike?
XXL. Oh, yeah, I want to.
Yeah.
Guardians of the Galaxy, 8 out of 10. Bloody brilliant sci-fi.
Yep.
Thoroughly agree.
It's awesome.
Jurassic Park 3, 4 out of 10. Now oddly forgivable. I talked about that last week in Decommend.
Still poor, though.
It's very poor. It's still a 4 out of 10. It's still not a good mark, but it's oddly forgivable. And then Batman Under the Red Hood. I didn't get a chance to do a 3-word review, so I've got to think of one off my head.
Okay.
Bat Family Dysfunction. Yeah, that'll do.
Ooh. Okay, family dysfunction.
I
like that.
I did say last week that I'd run through my number 1 out of 10 club.
Yes, I mean, I'm curious.
Yeah.
But I've put my phone down for a second, so I'm going to scrabble around and look for it while one of you starts your open forum. You shoot fight between yourselves. Scott, what's your open forum?
I watched the Nintendo World Championships. You can still watch it. It's available on YouTube on the Nintendo's channel.
Oh, wow.
And it's what it sounds like. It's a gaming event to crown the Nintendo Gaming Champion. And they play all the games you might expect and stuff to whittle it down from... There were quite a lot of them, actually. I want to say 32-ish. To, like, one ultimate... Wow. Champion. And if you can't be bothered to watch 2.5 hours of gaming, at least just watch the end when they play Mario Maker, because it's the most insane Mario levels you've ever seen, created by others. It's amazing. Mm. Anyway, it made me think about like competitive gaming and stuff. So is there a game you would feel confident enough to play in front of a crowd?
What, that I'm good enough to?
That you would happily play in front of a crowd. You don't necessarily have to be good. You'd just be not incredibly uncomfortable to be thrust.
I'd love to play a tactician's game of Command and Conquer, where you've got like the battleship screens, two of you sat next to each other and you're both tactically playing, and it lasts for 3 hours or however long those skirmishes last, and everyone's on the edge of their seat. But for a quick instant win, I think a proper Mario knockout tournament would be awesome.
Yeah.
And I'd do that on stage, you know, like, but how infuriating is Mario Kart, you know?
Yeah.
You've got to be good drivers to play it. Other than that, I like the idea of a proper knockout tournament in gaming sense, where you get a big room full of people and playing like NHL or FIFA in your case, you know, that kind of brackets, and then you knock them down, and that would be a good day for me, I think.
Mm. It would be fun. I had a similar moment to this in... used to work at cinema, and we had a staff night where we hooked a games console to the screen, and it was like a quiz night, but every member of your team had to do a gaming challenge, and
okay.
We put a different game on.
Nice.
But there's like 80 to 100 people in a screen, so it was weird.
Wow.
Maybe not that many, but not far off. So I had to get up to play like some PlayStation version of Mario Kart, and I won. And it felt amazing just to get all this weird whooping and encouragement as you're just, like, playing a game. You do feel like a weird rock star. You're just playing a video game.
Yeah. So but you've got that.
It's like, we might as well be doing air guitar, but you got that encouragement. You feel like a weird rock star, sports star.
Mm.
And funnily enough, the manager was drunk because we had drinks, shouted, "I'm neutral! I'm neutral! Fuck 'em up, Scott!" Which is a weird collection of things to shout, one after another in sequence. Clearly drunk. what game would you play?
I like it. As soon as you said Nintendo do this, I was like, I wasn't aware this happened. I should have been aware. But I just remember...
It's on YouTube if you want to catch it.
I need to. A film that I've spoken about before, I think... I don't know whether you've watched it, but a film called The Wizard, Kevin Savage, from years ago, that showcased Mario Brothers 3 in this exact sort of thing. They have a big stage and everyone plays as a new game, and none of them have played it. And to this day, I would love to play Mario Brothers 3 on a stage. It's one of the games that stuck with me because of that, and it's one of the games that I got for Christmas when it came out. And I spoke before about having consoles after the fact. This was a game, I had that console at the time, and I got the game when it came out, and absolutely adore it, so I would be perfectly happy to get up and play that.
Promise me you'll watch at least the final.
I will, no, definitely, because I wasn't aware. It sounds amazing. So do they go back through all the generations of games, or is it more a new game?
It's a blend, so
right, okay.
I don't want to give away all the games.
No,
although they pretty much do on their timeline.
They do go through the timeline, right.
But a lot of them are like co-op competitive games, and then if they have a system where... If you get a chance to redeem your elimination by, if you can like play Legend, get through a temple and Zelda quicker than the others.
Right.
So there's a few single challenges in there.
Okay.
And they kind of go through a lot of their classics or ones you expect them to touch on in some form.
Nice.
Really enjoyable few hours, actually.
Does sound good.
As geeky as it might sound to someone who doesn't watch gaming.
Oh, it sounds incredible.
Stuff. But yes, and me and Dan also want to watch the Pokemon World Championships.
Okay.
And they all pick a similar people, like Mega Genghis Khans and AG Slashers.
Mm. Right.
And the winner last year had a... Oh, I always get this name wrong. Patrisu? Picarisu? Or what? Dan's screaming at me. Listening to this going, you know this!
Oh, come on!
It was just a small pressure. Electric squirrel. This really unassuming, cool. No one would pick it.
Right.
Squirrel won the world champion. And nice. Stuff like that in Pokemon fascinates me. Like, you can still win by just picking left field choice.
Knowing the right moves and the right...
With the right moves, preparation, luck, you can just win with anyone, really.
Yeah.
That's awesome. I love that about Pokemon.
Yeah.
You can prepare so much, but there's that weird chaos element.
That's cool. Just remember, you've reminded me of Games Master. Did you watch with Dominic Diamond? Did you see Patrick Moore?
We were saying
the severed head of Patrick Moore.
Mm. We were saying we need shows like that back. I miss them.
Yeah, it was amazing. They were amazing. They'd have challenges like that and reviews, and that was ace.
But Crystal Maze is coming back.
It is.
I feel like we've done this.
Crystal Maze is making a comeback with Richard O'Brien.
We've done this.
We spoke about Nightmare ages ago. I think that should come back. Actually, we talked about that.
Yeah.
I think it probably... Unless they did it exactly in that format,
it'd have to be
in a big
terrible.
Swimming pool. Yeah.
I'd want it to be terrible. I'd hate this uber-slick nightmare.
Yeah.
It'd be, no, not for me.
Wouldn't work.
No.
Mm-mm.
And I'm going to check that out as well.
Right. Shall I let you in on my 1 out of 10 club?
Yeah, right? Let's see what they... Yep.
So my 1 out of 10 club came out about because we talked about Jurassic Park 3, which was always in there for reasons. That was lifted out because it was forgivable because of Jurassic World. But now I do have my, my I think that's 8 in here, 1 out of 10 club.
Okay.
1 out of 10, so... I don't know if I've seen anything on...
Well, we can discuss each one and see if they deserve to be in there. And the first one is one, the most recent entry was Jack and Jill because I thought it was that terrible.
It's hard to argue that it's awful. Like, I'm not... Yeah. Bad's not strong enough.
Mm.
But one... I just... There's something about 1 out of 10 that...
No, well, there wasn't many redeeming features in Jack and Jill.
There wasn't.
There's not at all.
I'm trying to find... There's a rating scheme, I think, that...
I know it was completely deserved to be in there, and so does the second one, which is absolutely awful, absolutely horrible, cringeworthy, and all the mothers in the world will tell you to watch it, and it's Nativity 2, Danger in the Manger.
Oh, good grief. Yeah, I've not seen the first one, but I've heard...
No, I haven't seen the first one, but the second one was just painful. It was like someone twisting a knife into my fingernails.
Knowing Andrew many years now, and obviously podcasting with him a great deal, talking about opinions on films and life and everything... There's one thing I know when I see like the trailers for Nativity, it's almost designed to upset Andrew.
You can picture Andrew cringing and
everything I know about it is just designed to upset him.
Definitely.
Next up, The Boat That Rocked, or Pirate Radio as it's American name, which was just awful.
That
Richard Curtis, Nick Frost thing. Richard Curtis knows how to rub salt in my wound anyway because he's just cringe. British awfulness. I hated The Boat That Rocked. It deserves to be 1 out of 10.
I agree.
This is where you'll shout
that bad.
I hate Richard Curtis anyway, same reasons. He's too Four Weddings and all that kind of and this is just utter
is it too
drivel.
Like
it's,
you've swallowed a container of granulated sugar.
Mm.
Is it too much?
No, I'd like that. I'd love a container of granulated sugar. But it's granulated sand.
Maybe. Here's one where you'll shout at me and kick me and tell me that I'm wrong. Grease is 1 out of 10. I hate it.
I'm not a big
absolutely
fan.
Absolutely hate it.
It's not 1 out of 10.
It is 1 out of 10. The songs make me want to punch people. The characters are awful. It's just horrible. I hate it. It's painful.
But Grease 2 is better.
Grease 2 is better. I'll always add that.
Too.
I'll chip in on that.
I will always sing the praises of Grease 2.
The Grease Megamix can just...
That's not Grease's fault.
Haunted my nightmares. No, but it is
Grease's
fault.
They did a
fault.
90s remix of their song.
If Grease didn't exist as a crap film, the 90s remix would...
But that's not fair,
telling you,
is it?
I'm currently planning my wedding, and there's one rule in there, and that's no Grease Megamix is being fucking played at my wedding. It is a wedding song.
Yeah.
Everyone plays it. If it goes on from either of you...
Operation Grease Megamix starts now, Steve.
I wish I'd never said that.
Jive Bunny.
The return of the Texas Chainsaw Massacre in 1994.
Oh, wow.
Starring Matthew McConaughey and Renee Zellweger.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Giant steaming turd of a film.
Wow.
And
was it not all right?
It was pretty much all wrong, all wrong, all wrong. Book of Shadows, Blair Witch 2. I love Blair Witch. It did a similar thing to Jurassic Park 3 in my brain. It just turned...
Was it found footage?
No.
No.
It was some teenagers who found it. The whole thing that made it
a sensation was abandoned.
Yeah.
Yeah, some teenagers...
The whole thing that made it original and interesting was just stopped.
Made it like every other one. The next one, a bit odd. I don't know why it's on there. The Bear Wench Project.
What? Is that a porn film?
I think that's a porn parody of the Blair Witch Project, which obviously got
me
very angry.
How did you rate it?
I don't know. That angered by it.
I was like, this is not a good parody.
I want to cement
there are not enough boobs.
Well, it sounds like you were very right to
get Although, thinking back, there was a man in a gorilla costume, so I don't know why I've given it 1 out of 10.
No, there's a rule. You can never go that low for
a
man
in a porn
gorilla.
Parody.
No.
Maybe it's one I should dig up again and watch.
Jurassic Park jump from 1 to 4. This may do the same. I think you should watch it again.
Weekly Geek Speak watches. Yeah. It's from one of our screenings. Bear Witch Project. And finally, Resident Evil Apocalypse, which I can't even remember.
Oh, I wouldn't. No, I liked that.
I like all the Resident Evil.
I don't mind them. Some of them get progressively worse, but they're throwaway action.
How does some of them get progressively? They
start off really good, and then they have a lull, and then the last couple got better.
Oh, it goes back up.
Yeah, the last couple got better.
How many is there?
Seven, I believe.
How has this been set? Where am I? What do I do?
I think Apocalypse was the last one.
I think they're made for about £2.
What was I doing when they casually made 7 Resident Evil films? Where was I? Was I at the shops?
I don't know. Nipped out to get milk.
I knew there were a few. I knew there were like 3 or 4.
Yeah, they've made a fair
I've
few.
I've not seen one of them.
Well, that's my 1 out of 10.
That's an interesting list. Would you ever revisit any of them and
Bear Witch Project?
You would. Mm, right.
He's promised
to watch the Bear
Witch
Project.
He's holding that memo.
Yeah. Did you see the scale we got sent on Twitter by Jen that somebody had?
No.
So somebody's done a rating scale, and Dr. Lex on IMDb has done a rating scale.
I saw this on it. It's spot on.
It's a really good attempt to arrive at a fair and balanced rating system. I've created guidelines below, and actually the only reason why I put this cheat sheet is to rate the movies. And I'm not going to go through all 10, but I'll read out what it says.
In broadly and quickly.
Number one, I'll just read out one, just says, God Awful makes you want to gouge your eyes out with a spork and either headbutt the telly or try to hit the cinema screen with vomit. Everything about this movie is bad to such a degree it doesn't become good in its badness. You wish you'd done something more worthwhile during the movie's runtime, like trimming your nose hair. If someone would give you this movie, you'd microwave it, burn it, blend it, or eat it to avoid risking other human beings being exposed to it.
It's
well, that's what I get from 1 out of 10 when someone says
something.
It's a good list, though. It gets rid of the 0.5 rubbish that non-committal people put.
It's a good. We'll tweet it up with the podcast. So you can have a look. Good list.
I feel like this whole rating thing is like a theme throughout the entire run of Wiki. Where we always arrive at some sort of ratings quibble or extra wrinkle. It amuses me.
Steve, open your forum.
I was talking to somebody that I work with about The Exorcist, haven't seen for years. But I didn't realise that there was a character that appears multiple times throughout it called Captain Howdy.
Oh, it is.
Is that the face?
The face, yeah. The terrifying face with teeth, the horrible teeth, and the thing that subliminally appears throughout it. And it was like, what? I need to go back and watch this. How did I not know? So then
it's the face of the demon who's possessing it, yeah.
But I didn't know that, yeah. Mm. And then I went on to say that Tyler Durden in Fight Club flashes up several times throughout
in
the movie
frames,
in a single frame, as does a penis, which is an in-joke to the thing where he's a projectionist. So that got me thinking, surely there's lots of other films out there with these subliminal things. I can't be the only two. So I did a little bit of research and then wondered if you two. So I'll read out a couple.
Always like that Family Guy joke when it's like, oh, do you remember that thing that subliminal used to sell cigarettes? And then just keeps going to the man going, smoke.
Yeah.
Are you smoking yet?
That's why, so I didn't know. But yeah, they're apparently the Dust Cloud with sex or SFX in The Lion King.
It's
always
SFX.
Yeah, it's SFX, isn't it?
Yeah, special effects.
The orgy scene in Eyes Wide Shut, which I haven't seen, apparently features a song that's backwards. That's an orthodox Romanian liturgy.
Eyes Wide Shut has really, a really annoying score. Bizarre. That's like someone hitting a piano going, intense music, off key! intense view. It really annoys me.
It's very like, jarring.
It's like, boom, boom. Because it's like quite a decent, like, simple. Right. And then it's always like, boom! It really irritates me.
I haven't seen it.
You know what I mean? There's a whole scene where he's walking down the road going, oh, I'm being followed. And it, so it goes on for ages. And it's like, ding, ding, ding.
You're like constantly on.
It annoys me.
I'll find the soundtrack. I've heard the film's not. There's Morse code in Peter Jackson's King Kong before they reach Skull Island that Peter Jackson slipped in. And apparently they're supposed to be saying, oh, we're going to capture this man. It just says, show me the monkey.
Show me the monkey.
If you actually decipher the Morse code. Cloverfield apparently contains three hidden frames. There's one from them, one from the original King Kong, and one from the Beast from 20,000 Fathoms.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's interesting.
Snuck in there.
Kind of the three big influences.
And then obviously I think one we spoke about before, that there's a, it's not really subliminal, but there's a quick flash of the Batman Superman logo in I Am Legend all those years ago.
Oh, yeah, that's a famous one. Yeah, it's on a billboard. And, so everyone was like, oh, they've been... They did it because it was a failed movie project, and it's something that was, let's be honest, probably was always going to happen at some point.
Mm.
It just happens now. That, although now it's more annoying because I go, that's not the logo.
Yeah.
It's vaguely the logo, but it's a bit different. Yeah. So, I don't
know. So do you guys know of any subliminal or hidden things in any films? Or?
Well, there's the TV. Old... the species that E.T. is are all in the Galactic Senate in Phantom Menace.
Oh,
and
okay.
Also in E.T., he says Yoda, and he can move things, so everyone makes out that's confirmation they're in the same universe, that we're in the same universe as Star Wars, and E.T. may or may not be a Jedi. Ah,
okay.
Because he seems to know. The way he says Yoda is almost a recognition.
That's cool. Isn't one of the kids dressed as R2-D2 in E.T., or am I imagining that? Oh, okay. That's pretty cool.
Looks weird.
Yeah, I like that.
Aren't the aliens from Alien in that Senate scene as well?
I don't know. I've not seen them. Either.
I'll
be amazing, and Alf is there as well.
That would be cool. Hey, I like cats.
Yeah, but that is one in Predator 2. There was the alien skull, and that's why they did Alien vs Predator.
Oh, right. I didn't know that either. That's cool.
So sometimes when they do these things, you like end up spilling into idea because they capture people's imagination, and that's
and
what
then
spills.
Think, oh, that's a good idea.
Yeah, into something bigger. When they're just cool nods, really, or a little frog. For the filmmaker's enjoyment, that's why they're called Easter eggs. It's just now we're all incredibly film literate, and we all have them on DVD where we can pause on specific frames, and stuff. And we're all eagle-eyed, and we've got the internet to help us. Because let's be honest, we get aid for this. Mm. We don't. The best ones are the ones you find yourself, but
definitely,
a lot of the time you get told, don't you?
Yeah.
I think as well, especially with The Exorcist, the face appearing is just to set you off, like uneasy.
Mm.
Did I see that?
Yeah.
There's another great scene where it's just designed to unnerve you, is when the priest turns to look at the girl and she actually looks like his mother, and she sits and stares at him for just a little too long, and it's just to jar, it's just to set you off and freak you out a little bit. Same with probably an Eyes Wide Shut, the whole thing is just to set you on easy. It just doesn't quite work.
Because even we sort of intense scores or scary, you do fall into it, don't you? Because it's beautiful music a lot of the time, which is why they go for it. I get artistically why it just annoys me.
Mm.
There's something about it that you're like, stop it,
no,
it's irritating.
But yeah, it's a good topic.
So that was
Let's finish off with what we do now is what are we reading, or have we done anything, have we watched anything, is there anything you've watched in the past couple of weeks that you want to talk about?
What on earth have I been watching, Steve?
I don't know.
What do I watch and do?
I don't know.
I've not watched any films.
This is true.
What do I do, Steve? I'm
any...
at a loss.
You
what
don't
I do.
Sleep.
I don't sleep, so I should have time.
You haven't watched. Whoa.
What do I do?
Do you have out of body experiences and drift off to another?
I must
dimension.
I can't account for anything.
Jen recently bought a couple of board games because we're going to start trying to have little board game nights. So we played Pandemic, which the guy from Patriot Games mentioned when we went to the con, that said it's one of the most popular ones that sells to get you into that kind of game. It's like, all right, let's give it a go. Absolutely.
Is it Pandas Take Over the World?
Brilliant, no. That would be good. It's basically it's a zombie outbreak game, and you start off in various capital cities, and you get dished out a character and a set of cards, and you play the cards, and you have three moves. So you're allowed four moves. You set you off, then you pick two cards that show you which cities are going to get infected, and then you add the
blocks.
You
ever played Plague Inc.?
No,
I've heard of it. It's really good. You have to like build up your virus and wipe out the world before they find a cure.
Okay.
It's one of those games, it's quite easy, but weirdly satisfying.
Right.
Okay. To destroy the world.
It's weirdly satisfying. I can't explain it.
Well, this one you got to save the world, and we thought, oh, brilliant, we're doing it really well. Because the twice we played it, we won. Oh, this is amazing! Third time round, we'd swap characters, we're playing along, and this is a bit tricky. Why can't we? Oh. And then we started moving this counter we'd not even touched yet. Mm. Oh, this is what this section of the rules means. Dead simple rules to follow, all's done in pictures, and it's like example moves. Mm. We'd skipped a vital part of the rules that one of the things we weren't allowed to swap cards if you're not in the same city.
Mm.
So we it's really, really fucking hard, but really, really good fun, really tactical, real team game, really gets you in there. Mm. And I'd imagine with four or six people, you start thinking, well, if you've got that card, we can swap that. And I can fully see how it immerses you in that that board game world, because it's dead simple to follow, obviously, after we worked out the rules. But, yeah, just really, really good fun and well worth getting, and if you're into that kind of thing.
And that's Pandemic.
Pandemic. Well worth the play.
I really want to play Munchkin with you guys one day.
We played...
We'd stop being friends, but it'd be fun.
Oddly enough, she got the Adventure Time Munchkin, but you can't play with two people. Even though on Amazon it said 2 to 6, the game came
you
in.
You can play Munchkin.
The box says 3 to 6. It's tough. It's tougher with three people though, because you can't. When you get to the third move, you have to like either fuck someone up or do that or help them. And if you've got only two of you, you're like not going to help you, ha, and that kind of.
Well, when I learned, I played as a two, and then we played as a three once I knew the rules.
Right.
So it might be a good just so you get a feel.
Ah, you can help
but
us then.
You need. Free, yeah, because you have little alliances and you have little fuck you moments. But it's just really fun, and there's just loads of left field turns.
Because the Adventure Time works really well with the wit. Someone said the wit of the original, but the Adventure Time humour works perfectly with these cards. You get the ridiculous characters and things. Oh, if you know how to play it, we'll have to bring it round.
Yeah, certainly.
That'd be ace. Cool. Yeah. That was that.
What are people playing at home board game related?
Let us know.
Tweet in.
I think the only significant read I did since we last talked read was Seconds, Brian Lee O'Malley's follow up to Scott Pilgrim. Well, not follow up to Scott, but his next book.
Did you go back for more?
I did.
For Seconds.
I did. It's the name of the restaurant, actually. That's fine. Oh. It's good. It's a very good, interesting, sweet story. It's very different and very nice and definitely worth a read. Definitely had the feel of his work without being the same, if you know what I mean. It didn't focus on gaminess particularly, it didn't focus on anything, but it did focus on relationships and regret. And then you can read it in a couple of ways, really, in the sense that it is just someone dealing with themselves at a point in life, or it's just a fantastic little fantasy as well. It's a very good read. Very highly recommended, actually, as a read.
I might read that then, if because that sounds good. Cause I love Scott Pilgrim's.
It's
completely
perfect.
The different kind of thing, but I love those graphic novels which tell a story. It's a completely different world. Yeah,
the mind that can create that sort of. Pop culture shell to like this really thematically strong concept and make it really funny while doing that. It's clearly a good mind, so even if it's not similar, I'm pretty sure I'll like what he does, if you know what I mean.
And it certainly works as a confined book. It should never be anything else. It's a brilliantly confined one book story.
Is the basic premise that the girl wakes up and finds something in a drawer without giving it like at the beginning?
You'll have to read it and find
out.
But yeah, that's what I've been reading.
Cool.
I tried watching Orange is the New Black, the new series, but I just can't anymore.
No.
It was a great first series, and then just has rocketed downhill. It's lost all its charisma, it's lost all its style, it almost feels like it knows it's got popular and all it wants to do is replicate lesbian love scenes and steer more towards the comedy, so it's more of just a straight comedy than a drama now.
Right.
And just these awful set things happen in a single episode that get resolved, and it's just throwaway. It's so throwaway, whereas the first series was a kind of lighter, funnier Oz, in a sense, you know, but with a more drama twist. The drama through line kept you going, there was a lot going on, you met all these new characters and things, and it was a cracking, really good...
I keep hearing about... someone called Ruby or something.
Oh, I don't know. I gave up 4 episodes. I think she.
There's someone everyone's in love with, and I can't remember the name. People won't shut up about it.
I probably will finish it, but I just don't think. I think it reeks of being rushed.
Right.
Like, oh shit, it's really popular, let's write a series. Whereas I think the first series was based on a book, and I think you can tell that perhaps we're not there anymore.
Right.
I don't know.
Well, Laurie Petty's in the series, isn't she?
Very briefly in one episode.
Oh, okay. Like one. She's not like a recurring.
No, okay. Just one bit. But yeah, other than that, a couple more Daredevils here and there, and then the Humans episode 2 was good. No, not yet. Still a way to go, really. But,
I wish I'd kind of eased that, because I loved it too much, so I obviously binged.
Mm.
But then you don't have it.
No, it's gone.
You eat your cake so quick, and then you're watching everyone else eat cake, and then what are you doing?
Yeah. Picking crumbs off your jumper.
Yeah, I wish I had more self-control.
I watched the rest of Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt. I sort of sat and sessioned that, which started off as a really strong, charismatic, funny series that sort of built up these characters that you cared about. They were quite funny.
Mm.
And it was a really good story. And then the last 4 episodes just went, what the fuck? And the Don Draper guy, I forget his name, played Don Draper in Mad Men.
John Hamm.
John Hamm.
He plays
the Reverend, and it just seems to be him. And then the two characters in the courtroom are just really fucking irritating and very 2D and stupid. And all these sort of nice, likeable characters just turns to shit for the last 4 episodes, and I was left going, oh, what? It's a real shame. It felt like a real anti-climax. I thought it'd be a really sweet, nice, well-rounded little 12 episodes, but
I like
really disappointed.
I like your recreations of your reactions. Like, what? I'd love someone to do like a supercut of like each time someone were playing in a film and then cut to Steve like, what?
And then I was like, but what, with the, huh?
Always like, play the clip he's referencing and then his reaction he says on the podcast. So it's like, and then it was like, what? Be amazing.
It would just be like Mark Wahlberg in The Happening. What? No. What? Which I seem to have spent the last week doing.
Cool.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, Scott has regenerated. Unfortunately, I don't know, it might be better, because we are now joined by Luke Biatnik, our Doctor Who proclaimed expert? I don't know where the expert came from, but you're quite knowledgeable, and we drafted you in last summer, I think, to do a few sections for us about Doctor Who. So, welcome.
Hello, welcome. Thank you for having me. I'm really sorry that... I have had to take Scott's place for this section. I know there's many of you that will be a little bit cheesed off because you're expecting the usual Batman 89 chat and stuff about, you know, things with comic books.
How's your laugh? Do you have a laugh that can be any way similar to Scott's? No, I think we're going to leave that. No,
yeah, we're going to have to leave that, aren't
we? You're a bit subpar in that department, I think. Well, welcome to the podcast. We've been mentioning for the past few weeks that you will be here, and you're here really to talk about Doctor Who.
Yeah.
Franchise, old and new, I believe. And we also threw a request for questions out to the listeners, and they've all come back with some good ones. So we'll be getting onto that later.
As some of you may have heard me, I did some segments for Weekly Geek Speak. A little bit more planned than this. This is more of a bit of a chat, isn't it? But they were very much... I wrote them and read them out and kind of went through and planned through and did some stuff. But thanks. You know, if you enjoyed them, that's fine. If, as I say, if you're in it for the normal geekery, you might be a bit disappointed. Basically, yeah, I'm a lifelong Doctor Who fan. I've been watching Doctor Who, I think, since I was about three. I can't really remember what time when it was not a part of my life. When I was about my first memory of the show of Doctor Who is, well, I must have been three or four, and we had a VHS copy of a story called Spearhead from Space. Mm. It was John Pertwee's first story. It was made in 1970, and it had the distinction of being the only Doctor Who to be shot entirely on film, which is why some of you will know that there's a Blu-ray release of it as well, because they were able to upscale it. But it absolutely terrified me as a kid. Sequences of these shop window dummies, Autons, as you'll know, that coming out of the shop windows was absolutely terrifying. And as a kid, I always found it kind of exhilarating, as I think Doctor Who should be for kids. I think that's part of the fun of it, isn't it? That it's exhilarating and it's kind of...
Yeah, I think for me, I'm not a huge fan of Doctor Who, but certainly what I remember from my childhood of seeing it, it was something I always wanted to get into because it was like a children's show, but actually scared you quite a lot. Even though the joke around it was there'd be a rubber puppet running towards you waving its arms around, there was that eerie undertone that came with it. And I do remember that Autons episode, and I do remember being freaked out by it and left me with a fear of mannequins to this day. In fact, only the other day, me and Steve watched a trailer for Tourist Trap, which is a film I've seen before, which is about a man who makes mannequins. Right, and it all stems back to Doctor Who. So even as someone who never really touched it, it still has an effect, and it's a great British something we should really be proud of. One of the greatest sci-fi series.
It is,
and it's
brilliantly
British and celebrates everything about British TV, the good and the bad, I think, as well.
Yeah, and it's the sort of thing that if you're not a Doctor Who fan, I do get a lot of scorn about Doctor Who, you know, and friends rib me about it because it's kind of like, why is it this thing for kids? Mm. But what they don't realise is that I've been watching it. I've watched it all. Like, I've watched 50 years worth of the show. Wow. So I'm not just the sort of person who... There'll be some of you listening. And obviously, I'm quite young, relatively, for somebody... You know, I was born the year after it was cancelled, when it had that long hiatus, just after Sylvester McCoy finished. And having grown up in the 90s, my only exposure to it was through videotapes and stuff like that. So the presumption is often... How can somebody know that much about the show, having only witnessed it via videotapes and stuff? So it's strange, it was just enjoyment on that basic level of, you know, it's kind of entertainment, stuff like that. But as I started to, you know, as I got older and stuff like that, and you know you meet people and you talk to people, and it's kind of it's strange, but I was made this point before. It's like a sort of archive and a kind of way of understanding television production. You look at the 60s, the 70s and 80s, and then obviously the modern series now, and you can kind of, there's this kind of progression throughout it, of both the quality increasing, the technical, the techniques being used in producing it, and it's kind of the story, the narrative of the production of the series is kind of a story of pioneers and innovators and people who had really profound points to make and ideas to kind of put out there, you know, and absorb into this thing that they were making. And it really is that story. And it's the interesting thing for me a lot of the time now is to look at those old stories and to look at what techniques they were using, you know, informed by all the other stuff that we did, you know, having studied media and having studied film and, you know, now teaching it myself and teaching my students to look at things and deconstruct things. It's a really interesting thing because it documents a fantastically progressive period that really can't really, you no longer exist, you know.
Yeah.
You have things like the fact that the show was given to a department that just were ill-equipped to deal with it. And the producer, you know, was a fledgling young female producer in a kind of hot house of misogynism within the BBC. People like Delia Derbyshire, the Radiophonic Workshop, that were doing things like gluing bits of tape together and hitting spatulas against iron boxes and making these incredible sounds. The sound of the TARDIS was a key being scraped up the inside of a piano, and distortion and things like that added to it. And then on top of that, writers and producers who had very strong and articulate ideas about spirituality, about freedom, about current affairs and politics, particularly in the 70s. And then, you know, technological advancements as well. The fact that you go from this black and white kind of monochrome set design thing to and, you know, you come into the 70s and you've got things like CSO, which is like the forerunner to chroma key. You get things like colour box technology, which was this like ridiculous way of like colouring shots. Even things like motion control, you know, you'd have they'd have models and incredibly elaborate systems of pulleys and gears and wires that connected these two cameras so they'd move in the same way, and sort of these really strange ways that all these pioneering engineers and technicians and creative artists got round problems that were presented themselves. And that, for me, is the essence of Doctor Who. At least that original run is about people who are incredibly under funded, no money, always running over budget, no time at all to do anything. You know, famously the lights in TV Centre would just go off at the end of a run through. You'd run through it. If you couldn't manage to get to the end of the lines, that was it, the lights went out. You couldn't remount it. It cost a lot of money. So constantly under the pressure of time, money, you know, everything. And as a result of that, obviously you'll know that some of the classic Doctor Who's were in varying quality, let's say, and much much more so than now, because now obviously with the it's just a kind of churned out thing, single camera shot, you know, the budgets are worked out really meticulously, everything's worked out. There's no like sort of, oh, I've got a mate who can make us this, you know, model and come and bring it on Tuesday, and you know, and things like, you know, where the paint's still drying on things when they're brought into the studio, so things don't quite work, you know, or we don't have a sound effect for this. We'll just make some noises with your mouth, and we'll put things like that don't happen anymore. You can't commission TV series like that anymore, and that's what fascinates me about it. And when people say to me things like, "Oh, Doctor Who's a kids show," yeah, it is, and I'm really glad that kids are watching it now. But for me, the appeal is in that documentary thing, and that kind of looking at it as an archive, looking at it as a piece of British culture. And like you say, it's given us some of the most iconic imagery, the TARDIS, the Daleks, of course, iconic design. You know.
Well, it's interesting to say that it's creativity born through hardship, really, and it became legendary because of it, and its cheapness, it also makes it lovable as well. How did you feel when they did announce that they were going to make the new Who? Did you kind of resent it a little bit coming back, or were you actually excited, or were you between?
No, I was, at the time, I was, it would have been 2003 when the announcement, I was 13 years old, and I've been watching Doctor Who, as I said, for years at that point. I hadn't watched everything, I don't think, at that point, but I'd watched a lot. We'd had the movie with Paul McGann in 96, which had kind of been a bit of a flop, and I was genuinely excited. I was thinking, great, new Doctor Who is going to come on, and, you know, it's going to be a new thing. And, you know, Russell T Davies, who had written the successful dramas for BBC, was attached and stuff, and then we had Christopher Eccleston, and it's just sort of, this ball just seemed to just keep rolling. And there was a lot of that. I read that at points, things like, oh, well, you know, they shouldn't remake it. Because if they do, it'll never be as good. Or if something's goes wrong with it, or what if they do this with it, or what if they do that with it. And there's a lot of paranoia, and I think that's the same with every sort of fandom. But this one in particular, there's an old joke, how many Doctor Who fans does it take to change a light bulb? Well, you can get as many as you want, but it'll never be as good as the last one. Because there's this constant paranoia about don't resurrect things, because you'll never do them justice. You know? And same with cinema and stuff like that. But I was really, really enthused about it, and I remember it came on that night in March. I remember it, March the 26th, 2005. Wow. I remember the day, the exact day. Yeah, and it was glorious. And I remember watching it and being really just loving it all the way through. And I seem to remember someone came in and said, "What do you think of that?" And I was like, "It's the best 45 minutes of my life." And in many ways, I guess the sensibility that I had at the time was that was very true, you know. And since then, you know, obviously I was 13 then, and now I'm like 25 now, so I'm a bit less like, oh great, Doctor Who's on, and I'm more like, you know, I just sort of put it on, you know, and it's kind of on, and I'm kind of, oh, that's good, you know, you don't know. You know, but at the same time, I watch, you know, old Doctor Who and stuff, and various other, you know, I read the novels and I listen to the audios that Big Finish do and that BBC Audio do and all this sort of stuff. So I'm fairly immersed in it all, but, you know, I'm much more in the sort of classic kind of vein, I think.
Yeah.
But you know, I've watched it all and I continue to watch it. I think Capaldi's great. I think it's really well produced and it's not overblown, you know, they don't spend too much money on it so that it seems completely like abstracted from any like sense of reality of what the spirit of the show was. I think it's still very quintessentially British and it's got fans who are writing it as well, which make it obviously a lot better. If you had people who were just hired writers, it wouldn't work as well. But the fact they've got people who really respect and love the lore of the show.
Yeah, that they loved it in the original case.
Means that, you know, that's the thing. It's the same with comic book stuff, isn't it?
Yeah.
You've got people like Kevin Feige and, you know, running the Marvel and things
like
that.
Yeah, people who loved the property originally.
Joss Whedon, yeah.
You've written an article for our website, weeklygeekspeak.com.
Yeah, which follows up on a lot of these things. It's full of interesting rambling about stuff. What I've done is I've gone through and I've kind of just outlined my own view about Doctor Who, so about the idea of me being a child watching it, and then history of the show, and then also gone into a little bit about, like, I sort of had this idea that I'd quite like to write a sort of history book in the style of the AJP Taylor, where you sort of take various sources of information from various Doctor Who media and combine it to make a sort of historical viewpoint.
Oh, wow.
If you were gonna, if you were going to go, like, you know, the history of Gallifrey between, you know, the years 2186 and 20, you know, and sort of do it as a sort of study. And it was this sort of jokey idea that I would do that, and I sort of make reference to that, and that's not it. Don't worry, I've not written that.
Although I can see it's meticulously done with references. As
well, I like
that. Done a proper essay.
I've put some footnotes in there, which are, I don't know whether you can get the hyperlinks on the blog.
Of course, I put hyperlinks
in the text, so it's all reference to these rather wonderful articles, some of which are from sources like The Guardian. There's a few other things as well, and. Have a read. You might find it interesting, and if you don't,
tough.
Then yeah,
I'll read it.
Or if you want, you can write to me, and I'll apologise to you. Whatever. But
newsy things. You had some news you wanted to bring for us regarding the world of Doctor Who.
Just on the subject of a kind of new and classic Who, there's been a bit of a kind of breakthrough in that respect with regards to Big Finish. Now, if you don't know who Big Finish are. Okay, they are a company who established themselves in about 1999, and they started producing Doctor Who audios.
There's a lot with the Paul McGann ones.
Yeah,
and a lot of those.
I'm not talking like audio books. I'm not talking about readings. I'm talking about full cast. Like, they sound like movies.
Mm.
The sound design is immaculate and they're incredible. If you like Doctor Who, you need to try some of them. Look at reviews. Look at. They've got a thing on their website which is like, if you're new to them, you just choose a few of their titles. You can get them as downloads or whatever. But so they did a few with Peter Davison, Sylvester McCoy, and Colin Baker. 2001, they started doing them with Paul McGann.
And that apparently that nicely linked up the whole between the series, didn't it? Like,
yeah.
And when was it the Day of the Doctor, the 50th anniversary, am I right? Is that the name of it?
It was a night, you're thinking of the mini-sode that Paul McGann did.
Yeah, the Night of the Doctor kind of, I'm told, did that finish, kind of reference where those audio plays finished and linked it to the series.
Yeah, exactly. And
brilliant.
What's great with the, I mean, the Eighth Doctor audios were always the thing, because while the show was off TV, they were always the thing that carried it on.
Mm.
And what was great is, as you say, in that mini-sode called The Night of the Doctor, Stephen Moffat put this thing in about the Eighth Doctor does a sort of callback before the scene. He sort of says, "My companions," and he makes reference to all the companions from the audio dramas: Charlie, Kerries, Tamsin, Molly, Lucy. Mm. And there's a kind of reference there to that. And it's fantastic that they've actually been able to do that. And then more recently, Big Finish have got the rights to kind of use some post-2005 Doctor Who stuff, because before they only had, you know, the first eight Doctors and the kind of classic era to play with, and now they've got new stuff. So they're doing, they're having River Song meet the Eighth Doctor, Paul McGann, which is great. That's going to be in a box set next year called Doom Coalition 2. That sounds absolutely fantastic. I can't wait to hear what that's going to sound like. They've also got a thing called Classic Doctors New Monsters, which is, they're going to have Peter Davison's Fifth Doctor face the Weeping Angels. They're going to have Colin Baker's Doctor against the Jadoon. Sylvester McCoy's Sycorax, and they're going to have a Paul McGann story which is sort of set near the Time War with like new era Sontarans in there. So they're kind of playing around with some stuff. They've also got a box set with River Song's Diaries type things. I'm not as interested in that, if I'm honest, but that sounds quite fun. And a thing called The Churchill Years as well, which kind of chronicles Churchill's involvement. The Churchill played by Ian McNeice from the kind of new era. They're also doing Torchwood now.
Oh, I see. Keeping that alive.
As well, yeah. And they're doing a unit series which uses the characters from the new unit, which has Kate Stewart and Osgood, that character with the thick glasses and the white lab coat and stuff. But yeah, they're really good company, and they're doing some great stuff, and that's kind of exciting now as well that they're kind of going into that.
Good.
Sarah Dollard writing for Series 9 of Doctor Who next year, and I was quite excited about that because we haven't had a female writer in a while. She's written some, she's quite a prolific writer of drama and things, and I'm quite excited to see what she does with it. I'm not quite sure what the story is yet, but I just like the idea that there's female writers. I really like the fact that we can have that, because it doesn't happen a lot, especially in the kind of what you would consider as a male-centric show. Even though, you know, half the audience is female, I think it's good that we have people in that, you know, and that we write strong female characters. And then at last was a little bit of a disappointment for a lot of Doctor Who fans. You might not know about this, but there's a classic Doctor Who serial from 1967 called The Underwater Menace. It's a Patrick Troughton story, and it's one of the ones that got junked by the BBC. It got thrown into a skip or burnt or something. You know, they went missing, you know.
Yeah.
And there's about 100, I think. There's 98 still missing or something from the archives.
Incredible, isn't it?
But one of them... Yeah, and you don't, but you know, but no one ever thought videos were gonna, the DVDs were gonna take off. But yeah, but there was one that was due for release because episode 2 turned up last year, and they were like, "Oh, we'll put episodes 2 and 3 out, and then we'll animate, you know, the first and last episode." They've done that quite successfully before. They've just announced they've cancelled that, so the likelihood is that either it'll go to a download or it'll go. But I just thought it was quite sad because it's like a sort of missing piece of the puzzle, a little bit, and then. If you know, there are reconstructions out there, I'm sure, and you can get one of the two episodes in a box set called Lost in Time, and I'm sure they'll do something, whether it's a download or whether it's... Because they've made documentaries and commentary for it and stuff.
I think it's incredible. You don't only have this incredible mythos within the stories itself and such a depth, you also have this fantastic story of the production itself. It's multi-layered in that sense, that there's so many... you can make a series of documentaries, really, about all the strange, weird... all the trials, tribulations, all these lost things, you know?
Yeah. Anyone's watched the Doctor Who DVD range knows that their documentaries are really, really well produced. And there is one called Trials and Tribulations on the Trial of a Time Lord box set. So you should pick that one up. That's really good. But yeah, you're right in that it's a kind of a... There's more document... The wealth of documentary evidence and accounts of its production outweigh the actual material of the show itself, you know. So it's good.
We got some questions from the listeners.
Yeah, you got a few quick Q&As. We got a long one here from Andrew Bartlett. And I don't mean that to denigrate. It's a really, really well written email, actually, and it's too comprehensive to cover in its entirety. So I'll just read out the introduction, and then we'll kind of break down what he's gone through. So. Andrew Bartlett writes, "Greetings, fellas. First of all, absolutely love the show. I got into the podcast thing about a year ago, and since then I've been working my way around, finding new shows that strike my particular interest. And since it's safe to say that what you guys bring to the proverbial table on a weekly basis, well, suffice to say, you're all scoring at 300. Lame bowling joke? Check.
Interestingly, in a little... when worlds collide in a sense... I knew of a podcast called Two Loose Screws. I know it's been shouted out a lot by the Pod Pals, and Mating, of the Mating Habits of the Modern Geek have spoke a lot about it. And it's one that's just been on my list. Now, I haven't even been listening to the ones I normally listen to, so I apologise to all of those that are, not that you know, but I haven't been keeping up because my earphones broke, and for some reason my life has not put me in a place where I can buy them. I either forget, I do this and the other, so I'm so behind on everything. But Two Loose Screws, I didn't know Andrew was the Andrew from that, so that's pretty cool.
Oh,
that's
okay.
Pretty awesome,
right?
Through my own negligence, really, and not keeping on top of it, but that's awesome. I will be checking it out for you, Andrew, and thank you so much for this email because it was lovely.
It's great. I think that, yeah, Two Loose Screws, I'll definitely be checking it out. Andrew goes on to say that he's put, I consider myself a Whovian. I've underlined that word, Andrew. Now it's a bit of a bone of contention. It's a bit of a bone of contention with it with me, this Whovian. It's a word that kind of developed as a result of kind of American conventions in the 1980s, kind of a bit taking a bit of a liberty with, and because you have Trekkies, which is a bit more of an established thing.
Which,
and,
but they have an issue with Trekkies.
Do they?
And so it should be Trekkers.
Trekkers, okay. So, I'm trying to remember that.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's all these kind of, you know, and they kind of needed a name. Yeah. Sort of Whovian came up.
Everything else will be, well, look at pop stars now.
I know.
You've got the, I don't even know what they are. You could probably help with this.
I don't even know.
Taters. They're not called Taters. Taylor Swift is Tay-Tays. Katy Perry's. Kitty Perry's or whatever.
Yeah.
I don't fucking know.
Kitty
Perry's.
Miley Cyrus.
Smilers. Smilers.
Justin Bieber's a Belieber. It's just
it's horrible, really, isn't it?
What would you rather
be like,
put? Yeah, you like?
They have to label every subculture.
Yeah, you've got to have a name.
So yes, Andrew, in the future, people ask you, what are you interested in? Say, I'm a Doctor Who fan.
Okay.
I'm a Doctor Who fan. Don't
or
say
just
you're a
say,
Whovian.
Just say
okay?
Whovian and just stick by your guns.
Well, no, because it sounds like I've got an illness. Like Whovian or a Hoover or a...
It does remind me of like a Hoover enthusiast.
And look, I'm not, Andrew, I'm not trying to denigrate this. I'm not trying to put it down because it's an American turn of phrase and I'm really anti... I'm not antiseptic. I am... which is a slang, I think, for anti-American, is it? I think it is. Let's hope it is.
Septic tanks, yanks, right?
Yeah, it is.
Slam,
oh,
yes.
It is. Sorry, yeah, I'm not into it. So, yeah, he then goes on to talk about...
Don't worry, he has told me off for using Whovian before as well.
Yeah, you're not the only one. I have friends who do it. So he's tweeting, did they ever explain how the Doctor and Clara made their way out of the Doctor's time stream between the name of the Doctor and the day of the Doctor? Now, interesting one. Yeah, they fall into a time stream and it's all this in this strange cave where all the doctors are there, or at least their body doubles. to be honest, the only thing I can say is no, they never explain that. Now, whether or not someone wants to write a fanfic about how they got out of there, I think that would be great. But
I want to write a fanfic about a guy who hates the word Whovian and starts murdering all Doctor Who fans just because he thinks he's the world's biggest expert.
And look, I'm not the world's biggest expert, okay? What's great, actually, is that sometimes my students will correct me on things, like if ever Doctor Who comes up or if there's whatever.
Where you
go? I'll go like,
all
oh,
the
yeah.
Tatums in the class they hate, it's not Tatums. It's Tay-Tays.
Yeah, I'm in love about every single type of subcultural label. But no, yeah, I assume he just, if there is a way that he could have got out, he just sort of
would you
left.
Prefer it was doctorates? Doctorites?
Oh. No, not really. It's just, you're just a fan of something. You're a Walking Dead fan.
Who's?
You're Hoofoos.
Hoofoos. Hoofans.
Or the Boo-Boos. No.
What?
I don't know.
Rubbish.
The
send in your your ideas for new Doctor Who fan
names. I
love
that you're taking this angle. You've not referenced once the gang leader thing, which I thought we were going
to
be
we're getting
prevalent.
To the outro. Oh, right, okay. We're actually giving you your time politely
right,
okay, as we're sitting here rocking, yeah. Waiting to rip the shit out of you.
That's fine. So, they either just go, or that's fine. Right, okay. So I haven't really... Yeah, I can't
so
explain.
So they just go on that
they
one.
Just,
that's just...
That's it.
Yes.
Yeah,
that's it.
That's fine.
Right.
Apart from the fact that, like I say, if you want... Andrew, if you want to write a fanfic, if someone else wants to write a fanfic about how they got out of that cave, then please do. Next. How likely is it that the Time Lords did something to the Doctor's regeneration energy before they gave it to him at the end of the time of the Doctor? Interesting one, Andrew. Now, I know exactly what you mean, because... There's always been that thing in The Deadly Assassin, 1975, Tom Baker story, for any of you that are interested. It's stated that a Time Lord can regenerate 12 times. The Doctor's used up those 12, and yeah, we've got Capaldi. Capaldi's technically the 13th, because Tennant used 2, you've got the John Hurt Doctor.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, how is he even alive? And they did some... There's this story, I think, what is it? Is it the Time of the Doctor? Yeah, the story is there's some kind of crack, and they... in time and space, and the energy comes to loads, and it's all a bit
cracking in time and space. That sounds like a good episode, right? Doctor Who takes crack, sees through time and space. This is some good crack.
Let me just try and keep my composure.
The time vortex turned into like the 60s, sort of. Woo.
Don't worry, you are still listening to Weekly Geek Speak.
Normal service will be resumed in a moment. It takes a lot. Yeah, but I'm presuming, based on the thing which you've referenced in here somewhere, the five doctors, where the Time Lords offer the Master a new regeneration cycle, they can just do that. They can do something, they can give him energy. And
the beauty of anything with time is things can continuously potentially change and be rewritten, even though there is rules that they try and stick to. Often break them.
If something is there that is a law that is written into a show, but that it interferes with the narrative, what are you expecting to do? Are you expecting to go, right, now we're just cancelling Doctor Who now?
Mm.
Like, in comic books, I know sometimes they just reset the universe.
Yeah.
Mm.
That's never been done with Doctor Who. It's still the same man, you know. Mm. He's had 13 different bodies or whatever, but, like, they're just carried on with it. No one's ever had the bravery to go, right, let's just reset and start from the beginning. But I don't think they should, because I don't think it should make sense.
It's a perfect kind of concept,
isn't it? For everything. Mm. But like, I don't like the idea that everything should make sense. Because that's where those little gaps are, where you can kind of make stories up and you can think and interpret things. And again, it's like that AJP Taylor thing I was talking about. You can kind of invent your own histories for things, which is good. But it's a really good question, Andrew. And you've gone into a lot of detail here, and you've elaborated. There's another question here. Have you noticed that the opening sound effect used to transition between the opener and the theme tune not consistent? Now, I'm a sound designer, and I know that the TV show is, like, mass-produced. So I know that it's not always that significant if bits of sound change. I suspect that sound effect is a sort of stock sound effect that they use, and if it's lacking emphasis that particular week, this resident guy who's doing, you know, five or six episodes of different TV shows will go, oh, let's put a bit of something in there to kind of whack it up. So I think that's probably it, yeah. You've also mentioned a thing about chalkboards maybe symbolising some kind of development in the series. I think, to be honest, the chalkboard's a bit of an affectation. It's like, again, that the Doctor is a teacher, as an academic. It's trying to make him seem... You're right that it's a very...
I remember the listen on the board.
Yeah, exactly. And that whole thing in the bookcase as well, it kind of connotes a sort of sense of a learned man, doesn't it? So, and also
a man who, as much as technology has around him, reverts back to the basics for his own, like, how he comprehends it, you know? It's like... strip it back to its basics and use the chalkboard.
The chalkboard, exactly. Yeah, often the problems are solved, you know, in the most domestic ways, as is kind of true to the spirit of the show. Use a bit of string and sellotape to fix a problem. But yeah, very deep stuff in here. I think a lot of the stuff you mentioned about, you mentioned listen and you've mentioned things, but yeah, I think a lot of it is Moffat just being a bit coy and a bit cheeky and making things up to sort of cement it all together.
Steve has some more from you, some maybe less in depth questions from Twitter.
Yeah, these are easy ones.
I was about to say, so that after that beautiful talk and an email, we've got Scott at Scotty Magically.
Who's he?
At Scotty Magic.
Who's that guy?
Who's he then? Is he on a podcast? I mean,
I don't know.
I think he is.
Maybe.
Yeah, but he says, seriously, what's a Doctor Who?
It's a abstract concept that is often confused with the character, which is actually not called Doctor Who, but is the Doctor.
Because I would have thought, with it being time, it would have been better that he was Doctor When. But I guess the Doctor Who is, who is he this time? Yeah, he's regenerated again.
Well, you say that, yeah, but the concept of regeneration hadn't really come. That was just a thing they'd made up.
Doctor, why has this series been going on for so long?
Doctor What Now?
Yeah, I like that.
Make it a sassier show, man. I like it. It's a good name, I think.
It's kind of, hopefully they won't peter it out, because obviously with Quantum Leap, they did that sort of every time he was leaping around in time trying to stop events happening and find his way home, and that just sort of went, oh, we'll end it. Wait a minute. No. Yeah. Did he? What? That was it? Really? After all these seasons?
And, I mean,
it's like, hopefully they won't go like that. They won't just go, last episode tomorrow, guys. Done.
What?
See ya. No, that's kind of. I don't know though, because that's kind of how I hope. Like, because Quantum Leap's one of those things where it's like you can kind of own it. You can get the box set, and you kind of. Doctor's not like that. You're never gonna one. You're never gonna see all of it.
Okay. You can never complete. You can't be completionist. No. Right.
And it's sort of like tails off, and there's just stories that you hear referenced that just never happened, and like. It will have hiatuses for 10, 15 years, or some, you know, or sometimes a year, and you know, and I think that's something great about that, really.
Jen at J Titters, my childhood hide behind the sofa moment was Mel trapped in a death bubble in Time and the Rani. What's yours?
Yeah, Time and the Rani, great example there, Jen. The effects on that sequence were really good. Time and the Rani, not so good. It's kind of, it's Sylvester McCoy's first story. It's kind of a proto Colin Baker story, if you ask me. It's kind of just reverse engineered from one of his scripts. Pip and Jane Baker wrote that one, and it's, yeah, it's not a favourite. It did scare me, though, that moment. I seem to remember as a child, it was a bit spooky. Mine would probably have to be that Autons smashing out the windows in... Oh, there's a great one from Genesis of the Daleks. There's a cliffhanger where Doctor comes out of an incubation room, and there's like, and the director at the last minute, so just holds something up to your neck and sort of gag as a way of like making it look really scary. And you should watch that, because it's genuinely terrible. There's smoke and green mist, and Tom Baker's expressions as he's being like choked by this bit of Dalek mutant around his neck. He's just, but I just, yeah, just came up with it on the spot.
It's Autons again. It's that genuinely scared me, but then I saw the new Autons, and they weren't very scary at all.
But you're not like a kid, are you?
No, but they look tacky.
They're not.
It's the old thing that you go to a charity shop and you see an old toy from the 70s. They're horrible.
They are.
But hideous. I think it's that more than anything.
Well, maybe it is, and you weren't... If you'd grown up in the 70s, plastic manufacturing, which is what this kind of story is partly about, was a kind of a cutting-edge thing. So, you know what I mean? Maybe it's looking at something in hindsight and in retrospect and seeing it as a creepy, kind of weird thing that you used to see. And there's that kind of nostalgia element in there as well. So, yeah, maybe that's it. Yeah, but kids, I know kids terrified by it because they tell me that. So.
Cool. Scott at Scotty Magic is back with a favourite New Who episode and your top five Doctors, please.
Favourite New Who episode? Probably... Would I go for Blink? Because that's kind of like the obvious one, isn't it? Blink's great.
Is that the Weeping Angel?
Weeping Angel was the first Weeping Angel one, yeah.
There's that gas mask one as well. Empty Child, Doctor Dances.
Oh, Are You My Mummy?
Are You My Mummy?
That terrified me, really, that episode. Good. It is, it's brilliant.
Really genuinely scary. But those are both Stephen Moffat episodes. And he's when he was kind of writing for the show, when he wasn't overproduced, that's the best ones, yeah.
It's one I've been back to more than once as well, because it is good. Just like, yeah, it's still a scary a few times in.
I was going to mention this towards the end, like if you teach media and you use Doctor Who as source material, show them Blink, because narratively, and you know, as a way of getting them interested in, like, you know, even if you don't like David Tennant, because he's not even in it that much, like, it's a great way into the show. Top five Doctors. First will be Fifth Doctor. Because when I was young, like obviously I saw Pertwee, Tom Baker and stuff like that, and then Peter Davison came along. He's like the young Doctor, the student-y Doctor, kind of bouncing around. Terribly sorry, mustache, all this sort of stuff. And he was always seemed kind of vulnerable as well. He was always saying, "Oh dear," and "I'm sorry," and
a bit like you, really.
Exactly. Yeah, I think there's an element of me and the Fifth Doctor in me. Then I don't know, probably Tom Baker, Patrick Troughton's a great one. I'm just listing them now. I think, again, John Pertwee was a massive influence, and obviously you can't overlook William Hartnell, who I think is quintessentially the grumpy old man, really. Yeah.
James, at Artie Fufkin, shag, marry or kill, and we've got Bonnie Langford, a Dalek, and James Corden as that guy in those episodes.
God. okay. I can't see myself having sex with James Corden or a Dalek, because that's got to be Bonnie Langford, I'd imagine.
Right.
Bonnie Langford.
Yeah, she was my...
Imagine marrying a Dalek.
It'd be weird, wouldn't it?
It'd be odd.
Make my tea!
No, but you were actually talking about the domestic. I was just thinking about walking, like,
I was
gliding up the aisle with it. You know,
I'm thinking longer term, because I think Daleks can be quite the nasty.
I don't know, maybe they're missing... I mean... They're a sort of blob of kind of effervescent goo in a bonded polycarbide shell, and they don't really get much affection, do they? So maybe I could sort of turn its life around. You know?
Maybe.
As if I could subdue
it. You could teach it.
If it'd stop it hating everything, you know. What's the point in
hatred?
And
it would give you little pecks on the cheek with his little plunger.
It would, yeah. And it would, and yeah, and maybe more.
Yeah. You have someone there to unblock the toilet if you need it.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah. Have you ever seen that Eddie Izzard routine he does about Doctor Who?
No.
And he's going like, he's talking about how, let us cook your souffle, and he's like, you need your sink unlocking, yes? And then he just goes off on this complete tangent about how these Daleks plumbers turn up to this. It's great, if you find it on YouTube, it's really funny. What was it again? Yeah, so James Corden, James Corden would probably be the one I killed, to be honest. Cool.
Understandable.
Yeah, and sorry, James Corden, but yeah, Dalek is more appealing.
Yeah.
And then JT is an artie fuff going to mention James Corden. Jen says, which guest stars would you really hate to see in Doctor Who? Obviously, they get guests in now and again. We've had James Corden, and everyone went, oh, what?
I did. Peter Kay was in it as well.
I did one of the segments about this, didn't I? Mm. About people like, you had like Ken Dodd in the 80s. You have had Peter Kay. That's a pretty bad one.
Yeah.
Foxes was in the last series, but I didn't mind that because I didn't shoehorn it. She was kind of there, she sang a song. I know she had an album out, which maybe trying to get a bit. But, like, I don't mind things like that because it's kind of undercuts, you know. And I know that the show needs PR because it's been in some really bad times, you know, over the years. And I have forgiven, particularly John Nathan Turner, who used to do it a lot, get, you know, guest casting. But there'd probably someone from TOWIE.
Oh, yeah.
Or someone like that, or Geordie Shaw. I think I would hate that.
What's the horrible one?
Joey Essex.
Someone who is a complete, like, media whore, or someone who completely just had no... Like,
Jeremy Clarkson rocked up in a spaceship in the next series.
God.
Oh.
Jeremy Clarkson, or, like...
That'd be awful.
Someone, like, just a, like, a vacuous, like, model, or, like, someone who was just, like, physically orange, or... Like, I just think I would just hate that. I would just be like, because what are they adding to it? At least Peter Kay, yeah, you say, yeah, but at least he can act, you know, to an extent. Like, he's not, they don't necessarily cast people, just people they wheel in who are completely just bewildered by what's, although Beryl Reed came pretty close to that, fans. 1983 Earthshock, that is a weird performance. Okay, is that all our questions?
That's it.
That's all our questions. I've got a few shout-outs, unless you want to do yours to first to balance
it out. We'll leave those shout-outs till the end.
Yeah.
But thank you for joining us. Yeah, will you stay around for the shout-outs?
Well, of course I'll stay around, Andrew. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Thanks!
It's all right.
We do have Scott actually in the room at the moment for the shout outs. It's the end of the show.
We do.
You enjoyed that Doctor Who section, didn't you? How did you feel about most of these points?
That would be an ecumenical matter.
I guess it would.
Yeah. Right.
First of all, I just want to say big thank you to the response for the call out for people to do Bumpy Goose, read Bumpy Goose stories for us. We will be picking them out for you and sending them to you, and then you're going to submit them, and there's going to be a special show later on in the summer with your recording. So far, I can excitedly say, we had Jay Tidder said she would do one. Andrew, who we spoke to earlier from Two Loose Screws.
That'd be great.
Liam, Paisy Paisy Poozy Peasy Peasy Poozy Pies. Paisy Poozy Peasy Peasy Paisy Paisy Pee. So he would enjoy doing one. So we'll send one to you. Adam at Aspoisy. Oh, those luscious tones. James at Artie Fufkin will be involved.
Amazing.
And we have Hates Me Tom from the ABH pod.
Brilliant.
Tom said they would be involved. So that's awesome.
Sweet.
There's anyone else who'd like to. So at time, Luke, will you do one?
I will certainly try.
Yes.
I was reading a bit of one earlier, wasn't I? Just to sort of test the timbre of my voice and see if it was.
You actually got to touch the Bumpy Goose book with those.
Yeah, I was impressed because it's in a goose binder.
Yeah.
I thought that was a tenuous thing you'd done afterwards, but apparently that was it at the time.
Steve, what time is it?
It's time for This Week the Geeks Have Spoken. Oh, it's different.
Is it?
Wait a minute.
No fanfare.
There's no fanfare.
Because Scott can do a fanfare, can't you?
He can.
What do you have to say, Scott?
Scott says,
I agree.
Yes. Yeah. What? One of his best.
Did you just agree that it's time to do that?
I think he does, he agrees.
Did you agree, Scott? Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I did. But Luke.
That was a good joke.
Thank you, Scott. Thank you.
Good one.
God.
Good stuff. So where are we? What's going on?
So, it's we'll start, as always, with three-word reviews. Thank you kindly for all your interactions, tweets, shout-outs, emails and everything. Keep them coming in. We do appreciate them. They are fantastic. The retweets, sharing the love. It's awesome. We'll start with Pete Bushbauer, the king of three-word reviews.
Did
at
you
Popular
get his
Outcast.
Latest one?
I did indeed.
I'm looking forward to this. I'm looking
I think this is
it.
Interesting because he has done the maths for
he
you.
He has indeed.
And this is where we stand. What, tell the challenge.
So the challenge. Pete is set himself the challenge of watching 365 films in the year or before the year is out, and each of us, me, Andrew and Scott, placed a sweepstake on when he'd finish. I said sometime in August. I think Andrew said October. Scott said September. So he's done the maths because I did maths at the beginning. He's done it for us. He'd have to watch an average of 1.8 movies a day to reach August for mine. God. He'd have to watch 1.4 movies a day between now and then for Scott's in September, and only one movie a day to reach Andrew's in October, which, now you say it out loud, doesn't sound like a lot.
Yeah, that's doable, isn't it?
And like I keep saying, he keeps going to film festivals and things, so that'll ramp up.
And he can double bill them as well.
I think, actually, looking at those stats, Scott's probably got the best, if I'm honest.
I would.
But we'll see. He might have a dry spell.
But I'm still confident.
I think he's going to do that all-day marathons, isn't he, just to prove you wrong?
Yeah.
Just get even earlier than you ever predicted.
Depends who he's siding with that week.
Well, yeah.
5th
yeah.
of July. I'm done, guys.
He'll leave it for like 5 days, just so he can tally the exact amount.
What's he been watching?
He's watched Major Payne, Wayans Shaped Soldiers, 7 out of 10.
No, I can't say I've seen that one.
I have. Fruitvale Station, Racism or Ignorance, 8 out of 10.
Not seen that one.
Fruitvale Station, interesting.
Not seen that
I feel like I need a little bit of context.
We should.
It looks like a genre. Send us a genre or something.
Let's have a look. He's watched 255 films, incidentally, to this point. He's doing incredibly well so far, considering we are only just into July.
10 left,
It's awesome. Well. He watched The Pill, Condomless Clunky Crap, 4 out of 10.
I've never heard of that. Never seen it.
No. Now I pronounce you Chuck and Larry. Intentions were good, 4 out of 10.
I agree. I think it just gets lost in childhood kind of idiocy. What does Scott think?
I agree.
Yeah, definitely,
Scott.
It's just a bit of a mess, really. That must have been towards the end of his Adam Sandler spell that he was doing.
Yeah. He then watched Bedtime Stories, another Sandler. Solid kids films. It's a kids film, 7 out of 10. I agree with that. I said I liked that one. That's Sandler and Russell Brand. Mm. And I do agree, it is a really solid kids film. It's quite sweet. It's 7 out of 10.
I agree.
Have you seen it?
He's never been this agreeable in his life. I haven't, no. Okay. I tend to avoid Adam Sandler like the plague.
Oh, okay.
Ever since Punch Drunk Love. So, yeah.
Oh, that was a terrible film.
Yeah. I must have wiped my memory. I think I have seen it, but I can't recall anything from it.
It's, yeah, it's
serious Sandler, as Pete said.
And I can see another one there, so carry on.
Yeah. Grown Ups, What's the Point? 5 out of 10. Quite a high score.
I watched Grown Ups and I didn't begrudge it too much because I think I was in such a place with Adam Sandler to just like, that's what I expected, tripe. But I was in an alright place to watch it at that point. And no more than a 5 out of 10. Really, for me.
I turned it off. Couldn't deal with it. But now, like you say, I might be in it. And finally, Jack and Jill. Why, Steve? Why? 3 out of 10.
6 laughs, Steve.
6 laughs, Steve. I still give it 2.
I agree.
You agree?
Yeah.
So thank
well
you,
done,
Pete, for those. And good work. 255. That's incredible. Keep going, sir.
Nice work.
Yeah. Jen at J Titters watched Happy, a documentary. Positive Psychology 101, 7 out of 10. It basically just explores what makes us happy and interviews lots of different people, what makes them happy.
What makes you happy?
Around the world. What makes me happy? I said, whoa. Curveball. What does make me happy?
It's sad you have to
lots
think
of
this
things make me happy. I've gone really quiet. Oh,
what makes you happy? Maybe you can give a more articulate answer than Luke.
A balmy night in a tall glass of Robinson's barley water.
Ooh,
preferably orange.
Nice.
Yeah, I mean, I...
Well, that would be an ecumenical matter.
It would.
Good point, actually. Yeah, I've never thought about it that way.
Maybe that's why I couldn't answer it, because I was waiting for the clergy. Damn it. She also watched Begin Again, okay, but overlong. It's Mark Ruffalo and Keira Knightley. Indie sort of film. 5 out of 10.
Mm.
Yeah.
I haven't seen it again. I'm sorry, I'm struggling this week with obviously. I've seen some Adam Sandler films.
She watched Mad Max, Anarchic Apocalyptic
Mad
Action.
Mad Max, which
9
one?
Out of 10. The new one in the cinema.
Fury Road.
Fury Road, yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Cool. Yeah, I love it. I think it deserves a 9 out of 10 rating. It's one of those fun things I've seen.
And I've not seen it.
People seem to have gone a little bit over the top with reading into it and things, but I think the very fact that it makes that conversation happen is a good thing.
I agree.
Yeah, and I know that Scott did enjoy it, but not to the levels that the hyperbolic reactions people were having, but I loved it. It was almost tailored to me. You can listen to that in an earlier podcast. I can't remember the title. I wish I could, but it is in there. It's got a picture.
And I'll share my thoughts next week. Freya, the event put out Run Roller Run, saw Starter for 10, 5.5 out of 10.
I love Starter for 10.
Mm-hmm.
I've got to say that now. James McAvoy. Have you seen?
I haven't, unfortunately.
Really, really good film, James McAvoy. It has Mark Gatiss, it's got James Corden. When they were already young at the time, and it takes place, this guy goes off to Cambridge, and Mark Gatiss is in it playing, is it Baz Banning Boyd, the guy who used to do University Challenge?
Baz,
I can't remember his name, it's the idea is he's going to play University Challenge. It's kind of this love triangle, and it's kind of sweet and cutesy, but really, really good. That's a recommend from me. Really good film. I enjoyed that. It's on Netflix.
Contrasting is the word.
Sorry, but I like it sweet and moving, touching. It's good. Yeah,
cool. Muthridge Caniv at M3JCNV. The Walking Deceased couldn't even finish. Hashtag so bad. Not even heard of it. Sounds like a Netflix thing. One that you'd find buried deep in the
when you're scrolling along for ages, and you go, oh, fuck it, I'll just watch this.
And then you realise you've been there 2 hours and not put a film on.
Yeah, that's it.
He also saw The Cobbler, Sandler, Shoes, it's okay. Hashtag, the hell was that intending to go?
Adam Sandler's dominating.
Sandler's all over the place.
Yeah, he is. We've already mentioned lots of people. Thank you. The Bumpy Goose reenactments. So lots of tweets and people up for that. Mike at Mike Fathers. The stylish new Ghostbusters uniforms have been revealed.
I saw that. Yeah, it's just a rail, isn't it?
What did you think?
Just look very, very much the same as the original, don't they?
Yeah, just
cut for women, which
is
very good. I was worried they'd put them in skimpy, like, tight things that kind of sexualise them. But I think that's really good and empowering.
I
agree.
Scott, definitely agree with that. That's good.
Okay.
Pete Bushbauer at Popular Outcast said, "Correction!" in capital letters, and again, it's me.
Hold
my hands up, we always get one.
You don't know.
The only connection between Wet Hot American Summer, which I decommended, and SNL is Amy Poehler. Mm. I just put that connection because figured all of them have hosted it at some point. Boxy. Scott.
Well, that would be an ecumenical matter.
Yeah.
I don't think it will. I'm not sure on that one, Scott.
No, I'm not sure about that.
Church involved in this one.
Superfan Robbie Polanco at Robbie_Polanco saw Carry On Cowboy, Plumber Beats Cowboys, 5 out of 10.
I've seen that film, and it's like, I watch the Carry On films properly. That one's notable for having Third Doctor John Pertwee in it, if you're interested. But it's like, it's like an illness I've got. and Peter Butterworth, who played the Meddling Monk, of course. But no, it's a really, like, fun film, but I can't take them seriously, those like, Ealing comedies.
No, because they're even, like, they don't take it seriously, so it's...
I know, but it's just too slapsticky and, like, a bit, and kind of it's kind of gender politics as well. It's so, like, it's like you want to kind of wash your hands after you watched it. It's a bit weird, but...
Old. I've not seen one for a while.
I agree.
I wonder what his favourite one is.
That movie as well, I believe, was on HOM podcast, and then I think they made Sean or some of the clergy from Nerd Church watch it. The clergy being Nerd Church, very good. What do you think of Nerd Church?
Well, that would be an ecumenical matter.
That one was elbowed into.
I don't know, with Nerd Church, though, I think we might need to secularise it, because it's a church of kind of knowledge. It's not, I think, bad call on that one, Scott. No. I'm sorry, but I disagree.
Darn it.
I agree.
Okay. Agrees with you completely.
Edit out of the gap.
Pays at Paisy Bones.
Paisy. Paisy. Poozy Peasy. Paisy Peasy Pom.
Nice.
That was a good joke.
Well, I guess it wasn't really a joke.
Good one.
Yeah, it was a good one.
It was good. More freestyle rapping in the future, please, Tar.
What was that?
When Scott freestyled the other day.
When we
did the beats and we rapped.
Have you not listened to that one yet?
I didn't. No, I heard it. Maybe I was like getting a attacked on the bus or something.
Yeah, maybe you were crying on the bus.
Maybe.
Mowing the lawn again.
Yeah. I'm not ashamed to admit it, listeners. I do cry on the bus sometimes. It's fine.
Just generally, it's depressing having to get the peasant.
I mean, if you ever take ridden public transport, particularly in you know, the lower parts of Sheffield, you'll know how depressing it can be.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Yeah.
And we also like to say thanks for the Nathan Earwig getting seaweed thrown at him and then his jelly-based allergies kicking off, the picture that he drew from the Bumpy Goose, which was brilliant.
Yeah.
Really like that. Thanks to James at Artie Fufkin, as always, for the podcast artwork. You can check James out, Artie Fluffles, on Instagram. His website is jameswormseyillustration.com. And, yeah, check
brilliant art. I mean, his Instagram's fantastic. He posts a doodle a day.
Are you paying him?
No?
No.
James, you need to get out of this gig. You're too good for this show, I'm sorry. I'm looking at your work now.
I agree.
Oh, God.
And finally, this week, the geeks have baked. Yay. Bex at Arbitrary Genius. Nothing geeky here, though. Husband suggested Peter Parker groan. No, pita bread she made. Oh,
ruined
pita it.
Bread with Peter Parker's
pita favorite. Parker. That's a good idea. Bread she made. Yeah. And we tweeted the Inhuman Centipede 3 poster and she replied, I was buying DVDs for
the library. Human Centipede 3. You have the Inhuman tick the time.
Oh, yeah, the Human Centipede 3.
Inhuman Centipede.
Ah. The Inhuman League was a skate team me and Andrew used to skate for in Sheffield, so to put that in. But yeah, I was buying DVDs for a library I used to work in. Human Centipede called The Most Debate. We didn't buy it.
I'm not surprised.
Steve today has neglected Robbie Polenko.
I haven't.
He hasn't, but he's looking around frantically.
Phone.
This is podcasting in action.
It is.
Podcasting in action.
Just to describe what's happening. Andrew's just passing Steve a phone now.
Nice.
And they're now logging in and looking up the aforementioned mistake, the tweets that they've managed to capture. Steve. Hopefully they'll be with you in a minute. Let's just give them some time.
You got them yet? Have you got them? Because I've got them up.
Okay, here they are.
Yep. Robbie Polenko, superfan at @Robbie_Polenko. I like the original ending in the little shop of horrors that Scott spoke about the other day.
Was that the original or the alternative? Which one do you like? Yeah, which is the original? Is that the proper one?
The original's the proper one and then the terrifying one's got some.
So what's the difference
There's lots of little mini Aubrey 2s all over the world, I think, in the...
He's going to kill himself and then he doesn't because he's got to suck the other Aubrey 2s or something along those lines, from what I remember.
Yeah. He also said, I watched The Goonies so many times on TV as a kid, might be worth another watch this summer.
See how it goes as well. It worked, you decommended it, and people are watching. Still wanted to watch it.
And HOM Movie Podcast at HOM Podcast chipped in. Hey, you guys! He also said, The Punisher in the next season of Daredevil just gave me goosebumps. Should be an exciting show.
Yes, yes. It's, as we said, good, interesting casting. I'm still to be convinced on the guy, but just to have him in Daredevil is pretty amazing. And still working through the Daredevil series, I'm absolutely loving it at the moment.
Yeah. Have you seen Daredevil?
No, I watched it now. I've been watching Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. I've just been watching that Channel 4 series, Human, which is
fantastic.
Absolutely fantastic. It's so well written. So well acted, but yeah, they've been my things recently. I've not been watching Daredevil, but I've heard it's good.
Yeah, I've been on Humans and I think it's very good as well.
Well worth a watch. Robbie also enjoyed our review of Jurassic World and enjoyed the reviews by Popular Outcasts and Wilbro Jr. 36. Loved the news from Mark, The Sword is Drawn on E3, and said Andrew freestyling over those beats. Steve had a good idea, watch Lost Boys come as vampires.
But it wasn't me, it was Scott.
It was Scott, yes.
I'm desperately trying to remember the rap now, but I remember it.
It was S to the C to the O to the T. I'm here recording with Andrew and Steve. And then he freestyled. It was good. Very good. That's it, I think. Dan Mote at Tarninial said, I've not seen the film or read the comics, but I wondered why you've not mentioned Marvel when you talk about Big Hero 6.
Yeah, it actually caused me to have a little conversation with him. And I think we did mention it in the Infinity list all the way back last year. But now, both times we talked about it in Recommend Decommend, it has been... not mentioned that it's a Marvel property. It is a Marvel property, but it is very
Disney. I had no idea.
Disney.
Is it a Marvel property?
Yes, it is, yeah. Once Disney got the, own Marvel Studios now, they're starting to use the properties in different ways, and this is one of the...
It's a Western, it's a kind of Western sensibility dealing with a sort of Eastern...
Yes, definitely, yeah. You can tell that, like the
San Francisco.
That's it, yeah. They kind of combined the two cities. And, right. Yeah, so it kind of...
They were obviously quite sensitive to that then. They weren't trying to kind of pass off this American idea. Yeah, that's reassuring to see.
Visually beautiful. It really, really works.
Good.
I agree.
Yeah.
Well, that's it. That's Weekly Geek Speak done. Thank you very much, Luke. At Luke Pietnik on Twitter. Do give him a follow. LukePietnik.com for your...
Website, yeah, I'm on Twitter. You can follow me. I've got to ask for permission first.
That's fine.
Yeah, my website, lukepiatnik.com. You can go on there. You can do stuff. No, you can just watch some stuff.
Hopefully we'll hear more from Luke in the future, but thank you again for joining us. If you enjoyed us, you can follow us at Weekly Geek Speak on Twitter. You can email us weeklygeekspeak@gmail.com if you have any longer replies that you can't fit in 140 characters. Also give us a like on Facebook, rocketing up in likes for us the past few weeks. Facebook.com/weeklygeekspeak. And if you enjoyed the show, please do rate, review and give us 5 stars, no less.
The jazz hand was brilliant.
Very alarming, that. iTunes, Spreaker, Stitcher and Podcast. And we are on YouTube as well, where Dan and Scott do run Bemusement Arcade. And yeah, I think that's it. Weekly Geek Speak will have a screening, which will be tomorrow if you're listening on the Monday, and you'll have missed it if you're coming after that. Showing Starship Troopers at the Green Room, so do come along and join us at 7:30 on Tuesday the 7th.
Great. I'm gutted I can't be there.
And I think that's it. We will be visiting various conventions over the next few weeks. We'll be reporting on HorrorCon, Sheffield's new horror convention, and talking about The Human Centipede 3 next week. We will be reviewing Terminator Genesis in the coming weeks as well. So share your thoughts on that. Send your 3-word reviews to Weekly Geek Speak. That's it. We're done. We're out. We're flying. We're going to regenerate back to Scott, I think. And we'll join you again next week. That's it.
Thank you very much.
Oh, it's warm.